a message and said, be of good courage, my friend, and let this book be what every religious or spiritual book is, an imperfect finger pointing with an indeterminate inaccuracy towards someone we cannot by our pointing make present, but someone from whom and toward whom we nevertheless feel permission to point feebly, laughably, tenderly. So this morning, let me point my feeble finger in the direction of the one whom we often refer to as God, but whom people around the world will refer to in many different ways. The one in whom we live and move and have our being, the scripture says. And thank you, Fiona, for reading that long text and reading it with such feeling and focus and bringing it to life for us in the way that you have. Ngā mihi nui. Thank you for that. One of our deepest human needs is to be seen and to be known. And very early in life, this becomes evident. It becomes evident. We see our children, and now for us, our grandchildren, when they are playing, perhaps in a playground, and they're on that swing, and they're swinging high, or on that seesaw, and they're bouncing, or they've climbed up the steps to the slide, and they're going down, and what are they saying? They're saying, look at me, look at me, look at me. I can't help saying that line, unfortunately, without thinking of Kath and Kim, but for those of you who for whom that is a memory, just kind of park that this morning. But there's this desperate desire, isn't there, in little children to be seen, saying, look, I'm here, see me. It's not only a request for attention, it's a reflection of this fundamental desire, isn't it, to be seen and to be known and to be valued. And the thing that struck me in this story as I was just pondering it this week was that in all of the possibilities that sit within this story, the thing that was most prominent in the heart of this woman as she returned to her village was this awareness that she was seen and known. In verse 49, when we read about her returning to the village, it says the woman left her water jug. She completely forgot about the errand that she was on to get water. You know, this need for physical water to address the thirst that she had, and others perhaps who she was carrying the water for, it was just completely set aside because of this encounter that she had had with Jesus. And she leaves her water jug and she goes back to the city, and it says, she said to the people, come and see a man who told me everything I have ever done. Come and see a man who has told me everything I've ever done. He cannot be the Messiah, can he? And then later on in verse 39, as if it's not sufficient for the storyteller to have tried to help us register this, John writes, many Samaritans from that city believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me everything I've ever done. It's reiterated. This is what's sitting in the heart of this woman. As she returns, this is what has been impressed deeply upon her and woven its way into her heart. It's lodged there, this awareness, I am seen and I am known. I can imagine her kind of going back to that village. It's encapsulated just in a little sentence, but saying to the man who she is living with, who Jesus has identified, and we'll come back to that shortly, but come and meet somebody. I went to the well to fetch the water, and sitting in the well was this rabbi, and he sees me, he knows me. He stopped and talked with me. He broke all of our cultural and religious norms and conventions and actually had a conversation with me, a woman. Rabbis don't do that, do they? And he knows all about me. He knows my whole life story. He knows my pain. He knows my secrets. He knows my vulnerabilities. He knows all about my relationships. Could he be the one that our prophets spoke about and our scriptures speak about? Could he be the one who has come to rescue and restore and heal our broken world? And you see, this knowing by Jesus for the woman in the story, as John tells it, is evidence of his unique identity, his intimate relationship and connection with God. His possible identity is the promised one. Holy men and women of the past, this woman knows. People closely connected with God had this ability to see. And John's gospel has this theme running through it of Jesus seeing into people, seeing things that others don't see. A few weeks ago, we had the story of Nathanael. And remember, he says to Nathanael, you know, Nathanael, I saw you under the fig tree. And Nathanael's going, what? Who saw me under the fig tree? Jesus had this ability to capture, as it were, this information about people and to see into their hearts and know their deepest needs. Or later on, at the end of this gospel, when he's standing with Peter and he sees into Peter's heart and he says, Peter, son of Jonas, do you love me more than these? More than these other friends that you have, more than this pursuit of fishing, more than whatever. And he's standing by a fire, which is a therapeutic fire, because the last time Peter stood by a fire that had significance for him was when he denied Jesus three times. And Jesus gives him this opportunity three times without bringing up the story, to repeat his love for him. So Jesus knows. Jesus knows. And this knowing for the woman is so is not only in this story an evidence of this unique identity of Jesus as the Christ, the Messiah, the one who's come to restore the broken world, but it's a liberating and healing and empowering experience. He knows her well and loves her fully. There's nothing in her life that can stand in the way of this love and acceptance. But what about verses 16 to 18, you say? Because depending on how you read them, and just keep in mind that when we're reading texts, they say that even in verbal communication, there's only a small percentage of the communication is the actual words. There's another percentage which is the tone, and there's another percentage which is the body language. So when we read words and even when we read passages, the intonations that we use convey meaning. And when I've heard this text used, not by you this morning, Fiona, or read, but it's hard to get your head around what Jesus might be saying when he says, go call your husband and come back. How did Jesus say that? That's what I want to know. And then when he says to her, and she says, I have no husband, and Jesus says, you're right in saying I have no husband, for you've had five husbands, and the one you have now is also not your husband. How did Jesus say that? What's he conveying? Because many places that I've heard it read and then heard it expounded, it's like a word of condemnation, dumping shame and guilt and judgment onto the woman. But you know, when I hear Jesus saying those words, I don't hear the voice of condemnation. I hear the voice of compassion. I hear Jesus saying, I see you. I know who you are. I know your story. You see, her story wasn't a story of bed hopping and sexual promiscuity. And even if it was, I don't think Jesus would have been dumping that condemnation on her. Because later on in the gospel, there's another story about a woman who people want to shame and condemn and judge and put weight on. And Jesus pushes the people away. But in this story, this gospel doesn't tell us that at all. It'd be easy to jump to that conclusion, and many do. But what we do know is that she lived in a day when women were men's property. And if she didn't belong to her father, she would belong to her husband. She would be the property of her husband. Such was the patriarchy of the culture of that day. And nobody would have thought to ask her what she wanted. You can be pretty sure that she wouldn't get to pick any of her five husbands. And we don't know whether she lost them either. We don't know. What we do know is that it wasn't her choice. And the man she was living with now didn't want to take responsibility for her and marry her. If that was the case, there wasn't anything that she could do about it. So park those assumptions. Incidentally, this raises kind of an important aside here, that not every interpretation of Scripture is a plausible or credible one. Yes, we see different things in the text, but some things we are planting in the text that simply aren't there. And that's not there. This is a word of compassion. This is a word which says, I see you. I know your story. I'm not here to judge and condemn and put a weight on you. I'm here to bring the water of life to you. I see your pain. I see your rejections. I see your loneliness. I also see your failures and your shattered hopes and dreams, your losses and your griefs, and I love you in the midst of all of those. I'm not here to take something more from you. I'm here to give you the living water. And that's a gift. It's not a meritocracy that God's bringing to earth, whereby you're going to have to prove or fit the bill to warrant it. It's the gift of the living God to you, to give you the life and dignity that the Creator intended for you. Such a different story. Such a liberating story. Not that there aren't threads of life that need to be unraveled and unpicked so that wholeness can come in. But that here is this essential posture of God, not only to her, but to every one of us who sit in this room, embodied in Jesus, the one who John begins his gospel by saying, in this Christ, the life of God is tabernacled. So that we can learn how it might be tabernacled in us. I just want us to listen to a piece of music again. It's a video, and it highlights this. It's a song which is interwoven with some commentary. Now, for me, just this may not be, you know, your response, but the artist has a very strong American accent, and I kind of struggle a little bit there. Anybody who is American here, my apologies, it's just me kind of trying to, my Kiwi vibe kind of struggles a little bit with it. So if that is something that may affect you, then just park that. But listen to this song and the storytelling, which weaves stories of women from the Bible who have experienced the liberating presence of God in their lives into the song and narrative. And it speaks of being seen and being known and being loved. Let's listen to this together.
Was a single mother. She was abandoned by the family she belonged to. And there in the wilderness with her son, alone, with very little provision, she was wondering. She was questioning. Does anyone care? She's crying now. The desert. She's lost in her despair. She thinks nobody loves her. Hagar thinks nobody's there. But God says, She had heard an inner invitation to come and taste and see. And so she vowed herself to her mother-in-law and said, "Where you go, I will go. Where you lie, I will lie. Where you die, I will die." And she begins a journey to the promised land. She's traveling through the desert.
Rock of your salvation, I'll hold you up.
had an encounter with a woman named Mary of Magdala, who was plagued by demons, tormented by evil spirits. And Jesus set her free. And Mary followed him. She listened at his feet. She served him, and she loved him. Oh, how.